Welcome to Holistic Matters, the podcast that's designed to help you become the you that nature intended. Hi, welcome to Holistic Matters podcast. I'm John Trope, and this afternoon we're at the Integrative Health Symposium 2019 in New York City with Dr. Jess Dolley. Jess, thanks for joining us, and thanks for a great presentation earlier today.
Pleasure.
So today we're interested in talking about underlying systems of inflammation, and maybe we could start off with just your explanation and insights into what is the challenge in trying to manage and address this underlying problem of inflammation. What's the secret to our understanding of the system?
I think inflammation, because it's given one name, has been oversimplified as a process, and in particular when it comes to understanding disease, because each condition, and actually we're learning nowadays that each person has a different sequence of events that lead to their disease. So the challenge is really to understand what led to that particular condition, whether it's for example, when we think about pro-resolving mediators, whether it's the lack of the body, the lack of the ability of the body to produce the molecules, whether it's that the receptors that are required for the signaling of these pro-resolving mediators are not expressed on the target cells, so white blood cells or the endothelium, for example, or whether it's that the signaling that those molecules are elicited via their receptor is defective. And this goes for many other factors, you know, cytokines, chemokines, and all these other factors that are central to the onset and propagation of inflammation. So I think by sometimes simplifying things, we've overlooked a very complex system. And I think now with the appreciation that personalized medicines are or personalized therapeutic approaches are really what we should be thinking about, it will help us appreciate better what is the underlying cause of a disease in a set person.
Right. So if we were to try to tease out what you just described in the system, so we know that the specialized pro-resolving mediators and ultimately the formation of resolvins themselves are the real active components. But are they endogenously available, and are they then sourced from an important substrate? Like, is it omega-3s as the starting material that plays such an important role?
Yes, so as you rightly say, John, the molecules are endogenously produced. They're produced from essential fatty acids, and the essential fatty acids that are involved in the biosynthesis of pro-resolving mediators are four. There are three from the omega-3 family, which are the eicosapentaenoic acid, docosapentaenoic acid, and docosahexaenoic acid, and one is the omega-6 arachidonic acid. Which also, incidentally, is precursor to what's classically thought as inflammatory molecules, the prostaglandins and leukotrienes. And so the formation of these molecules relies on, one, having the right enzymes that are involved in the biosynthesis in the right cell at the right time, and obviously having the substrate available. And as we know, for essential fatty acids, we require uptake of these essential fatty acids via our diet, and our diet has drifted over the years, and we have in general a reduction in omega-3 in particular fatty acid.
Okay, so the body makes these lipid mediators. They're dependent on the availability of omega-3s, and then you just introduce another important concept, is the enzyme activated breakdown of the omega-3s to convert to these intermediates. Can everybody convert the omega-3s efficiently to the intermediates, or are the limitations caused in part by chronic disease states or things like obesity or metabolic syndrome that make it more difficult?
So in healthy people, that is part of what we think, at least, and the evidence, especially at the clinical level, is still coming, but there is basic evidence suggesting that this is the case, that everyone can makes these molecules, and they're essential in the maintenance of health and the organ function. In disease, there's evidence in experimental systems as well as in humans that there is a disruption in these pathways. And this disruption is linked to the inflammation that's occurring in patients with all sorts of inflammatory conditions, cardiovascular disease, rheumatoid arthritis, for example. So this is where the supplementation needs to be then targeted. For example, in cardiovascular disease, we recently found that 5-lipoxygenase is not effective. So despite trying to supplement the system with, say, an omega-3 fatty acid, because that 5-lipoxygenase is ineffective, the production of pro-resolving mediators will still be limited. Mm-hmm. And so to circumvent the system, one could think about having a precursor that is produced via this enzyme to, as part of the supplementation regime, to jumpstart the formation of pro-resolving mediators and sort of circumvent right. that defect.
So if you're experiencing an underlying health issue or even a disease state, it may be likely that, say, you're deficient in or you don't have an efficient operating conversion system of LOX5 or COX2, in which case, for sure, you need to find a way to provide an exogenous source. Does that mean, is that a fair
Correct.
Assessment?
Correct. That, okay. that is actually very true.
Right. And then I guess that the next thing that, particularly in this conference, that we hear a lot about is that, okay, everybody talks and understands this underlying issue of inflammation. But sometimes typical for people who want a quick answer or a quick solution, the tendency to always to find, you know, one component. You know, for example, turmeric or curcumin could be a popular herbal treatment, but that's just like really one tiny piece of the inflammatory issue. And so I think the challenge that you talked about in your lecture is an integrated system that is influenced by a number of key components. And if we can identify what the key influencing components are, now we have a chance to actually make a difference. So to me, I always looked at the resolvent system, if you will, and the lipid mediators as central. So whatever you can do to get those to be active and effective, now you're onto something. But are there components that you had mentioned worth talking about? So for example, you talked about the influence of microRNA. You talked about the cannabinoid system. Could you share with us a little bit about those systems of influence that make the resolvent system and vice versa more effective?
Yes, so to start off with the cannabinoid system, the crosstalk between the cannabinoid system and pro-resolving mediators was described several years ago, but limited work has been done in that aspect. And the more recent work is really showing that pro-resolving mediators have the ability to improve the signaling of cannabinoids, endogenous cannabinoids. So we're talking about anandamide, for example. They improve the signaling of anandamide through the cognate receptor and therefore exert additional protective actions in addition to activating their own cognate receptors by controlling the cannabinoid system. There is also evidence, clinical evidence, or at least early clinical evidence, that pro-resolving mediators, even in humans, not just in experimental systems, cannabinoids upregulate the formation of pro-resolving mediators in humans. And this is potentially part of the mechanism by which pro-resolving cannabinoids can be protective. Obviously, this is still, as I said, this is still early days in understanding how these two important and fundamental systems talk to each other,
right.
And what happens in disease then, and how we can then reconstitute the system to address inflammation.
Right.
In terms of microRNA, microRNAs are part of the genetic regulation of cellular responses, and as the pro-resolving mediators activate cascades within a cell. This is how they regulate the cellular responses. What we've recently found is that through the activation of cognate receptors, there's regulation of specific microRNAs. And these microRNAs appear to be also specific to different pro-resolving mediators, probably because each is responding to a specific receptor-mediated yeah. signal. And these microRNAs are involved in most cases at least, in down-regulating inflammatory genes. And they do so by binding to the message that is used to transcribe pro-inflammatory genes. Okay. So this is part of the system that is activated by one pro-resolving mediator through one receptor system that then feeds down to a cascade that activates and regulates and reprograms the target cell.
Right. So it's like a pretty sophisticated system with at least two or three critical components. You've been a pioneer in this category, and have done and captured most of the insights and how the system works and how it's influenced. So it's like incredible work, and actually quite promising from a clinical therapeutic point of view. But what's left? What do we still need to do? Certainly, we need to do more clinical work. And how would you describe, you know, the near term needs that industry and investigators should be focusing on, trying to get even a better clinical understanding of the underlying mechanisms?
Yeah. So I think in that little phrase there, you've probably encapsulated my career and my future yeah. aims for the yeah. next.
Yeah, I just defined the next 30 years of your career.
But there's a lot that we need to learn, and the reason why I say this is because we started off thinking about the pro-resolving mediators as molecules that are specifically produced during the resolution phase of inflammation to stop inflammation. With the advent of better technologies, what we've found is that these molecules are actually not only produced during the resolution phase, but are present at any point in time in all our organs, and suggesting that in addition to controlling inflammation, they also help protect the body from disease, from going into an inflammatory state that then leads to disease. So what we need to understand better, and what we're really focusing on at the moment, is to really dissect what each of these molecules is doing in the body. And I think this is important because it will tell us what leads to disease. We have a whole range of mediators. They have specific structures. As far as we can tell, they activate their own cognate receptors. And that's another aspect that we're actively working on, identifying the receptors for each of these molecules, because from a therapeutic point of view, those receptors become target candidates to develop new drugs that one can activate to improve inflammation. And the other aspect that I think is really essential for us to understand is how the body specifically regulates the formation of specific mediators. Because in humans, we saw this in animals, and now we're actually replicating this in humans, the formation of different mediators seems to be very tightly controlled. And the interesting aspect is that the enzymes that produce the various range of mediators are the same. So the big question is, how does a cell know what to produce when? Right. And that, I think, is a really fundamental question, because it will tell us again what leads to disease. Because once we know what the decision paths for biosynthesis are in health, then we can figure out why they don't occur in disease.
Right. So as we start teasing out the clinical indications and clinical therapeutic pathways, at the same time, it would be helpful if we had some type of way of monitoring or diagnosing the system. Would you have an insight on what more relevant tools might be? I mean, is it something as simple as an omega-3 index, just to give you an idea of the viability of the system, or is it hsCRP, or is it ultimately going to be measurement of some of these pro-resolving mediators in the urine or in the serum samples that sophisticated labs and groups, clinical groups, should be working toward measuring?
I think the omega-3 index has been something that many people have tried to use for many years, but with limited success. I think the omega-3 index has some utility, but it's really more in sort of knowing how much you've loaded with omega-3s. And you know, the old paradigm of omega-3s are good for you, omega-6 are bad for you, is not necessarily being supported by clinical evidence. So I think that index is limited in what it can tell us. My feeling, and what we're really focusing on, is to understand and to identify specific molecules that can become key biomarkers for disease and then treatment response. As, for example, CRP has been used for decades now as a marker of inflammation, although it is a relatively blunt tool because it doesn't really tell you much apart from there's inflammation or there isn't. I think by having specific molecules that then can be transformed into tools like that can be used at, in a clinical lab or even a GP type setting, a PCP type setting, one could then be able to first of all determine whether what level of inflammation the patient has, and these biomarkers, these molecules are likely to be disease specific. And also we think, given that the pro-resolving mediators from at least from the studies done so far appear to mediate some of the protective actions of clinically relevant drugs like aspirin and statins, we think by measuring these molecules we can determine whether a patient is going to respond or be refractory to a specific treatment. So you can have different panels of biomarkers, one to determine disease activity or severity, if you will, and the other one is to determine treatment response. Right.
And eventually, do you think that the science and the technology will get to the point where those diagnostic markers will be more specific by condition? I mean, you already mentioned cardiovascular disease and the specific LOX5 issue, which is probably different from another condition in COX2.
Right.
Same issue with diagnostics.
I do think that we're moving in that direction, and you know we're putting a lot of effort into it, into that aspect, and even from an industry perspective, there is the appetite towards to move in that direction. I think that's fundamental. Yeah.
So do you know more about like the impairment of the system? You know, like you mentioned cardiovascular disease and LOX5. Are there other conditions that you already have identified or begun teasing out on X condition has a bigger problem in COX-2 influence and conversion, or other conditions in LOX5 or other enzymes for that matter?
I think the 5-lipoxygenase in cardiovascular disease has been the sort of the forefront, and actually it was one of the things that came up many years ago in GWAS studies, that there's an issue with 5-lipoxygenase, and now we understand a bit better what this particular issue is. It's by far, we have not the beginning and the end of it, but there's headway. In terms of other diseases, from an experimental perspective, we seem to get an understanding that there's, for example, downregulation of specific pro-resolving receptors. Diabetes in humans in particular is a very nice study from a group at the Foresight Institute led by Tom Van Dyke that shows that in patients with diabetes, although there's an upregulation of the receptor for resolving E1, that receptor doesn't signal as well for a reason that we're still not very clear about. It doesn't signal as well. So even though the molecule is present, the receptor is present, but it's not exerting its biological function. So that suggests that point of regulation can also occur in other diseases, potentially for other receptors too. Right.
So you've mentioned a couple of times this concept of system influence, which includes availability of the right actives, but also activation of that system. Is that like the two important components that ultimately we need to continue to work toward and learn more about?
Those are two. The receptor aspect is also very important because you can still, as I gave the example for resolving E1 in diabetes, you can have all that aspect of the system, the formation, the biosynthesis, the substrate, etc. And then if the receptors on the other side are not present or they're not functioning, then it becomes again a lost in translation aspect.
How quickly is the response? Just even by endogenous availability of these lipid mediators, or even if you took an exogenous source and was fully effective, is that it's not a 45-minute response, or is it? Or is it days or weeks?
So it's dual actually. So you have an early response that is mediated by the activation of the receptor. So for example, in leukocytes, in neutrophils, monocytes, the activation of the receptor leads to detachment of leukocytes from the vascular wall, which is the first step in leukocyte recruitment to the site of inflammation. But we then see that if you give a bolus, one dose to an animal, for example, you can see effects on pain for 2 weeks later. So this suggests that there is a bigger, more fundamental response that is occurring in the system to reprogram the system to be more protective.
Have you yet been able to narrow down the concentration or the levels of actives that are required to have some even minimal biological effect or even a clinical effect?
So in humans, we've recently conducted a study, a very small study, looking at dermal inflammation following the injection of heat inactivated E. coli. And the concentrations of mediators that were biologically active were in the low picomolar concentrations.
Wow. They're powerful.
So the biology, and this is what we measure in terms of concentration for these molecules. So we're no longer talking about the mass in terms of amount, and the idea of more is better is not necessarily always the case, and definitely not the case in this particular situation. So all you need is a small amount that activates the target receptor, and then you have a cascade.
Interesting. So it's well tolerated. When people would take exogenous sources, it gets through the gut, it gets absorbed where it needs to absorb.
So this is where the more is not better aspect comes. Right. The exogenous sources in particular, when it comes to sort of refined oils and this sort of thing, there is a level where it becomes toxic. And there are FDA recommendations on daily amounts of these omegas that you should take. And beyond that, you start influencing things like the bowel, for example, because ultimately it is an oil, right? And it's sort of oils, as we know in mechanics, are lubricants too, and that has a similar effect on the bowel, and the body starts because once you go above a certain amount, it becomes difficult to emulsify fats. There's a response to, as a foreign body, to the oil droplets themselves, and that leads to an immune response in some cases. So more is better is not the case. There needs to be really well controlled pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics studies to assess what the right dose is, and I think that's been lacking in general in really getting a handle on it.
Great. Dr. Dahl, you gave a fantastic lecture this morning to lead off our seminar. It'll be available and posted online on holisticmatters.com. So we'd encourage everybody to take the time to go listen to that and watch that. It's some fantastic new insights and new science. So thanks very much for joining us at this conference. This has been a Holistic Matters podcast, the podcast that's designed to help you become the you that nature intended. Dr. Dahl, thanks very much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
This podcast features the song New Day by Lee Rosevier, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. If you liked this podcast, please share with your friends and family, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. We'll see you next time on Holistic Matters, where we are talking about how to be the you nature intended.